What's up, everybody? You are listening, you are watching the Complex Sneaker Show. As always, I'm joined by my two co-hosts, my two friends. To my right, Mr. Matt Welty.
We're here. We're surviving.
We are. To my left, Mr. Brendan Dunn.
Hello.
How we doing? 200th episode?
Yeah. Is there more confetti? We had one single slice of confetti accidentally fall in the last episode. Yeah. Or is there any? I'm going to close my eyes. You tell me if there's any confetti falling right
there's
now.
There's none. Should we?
Should I open my eyes? There's no confetti?
No. Should we un-DS the Nike Air horn?
Bam, bam, bam. Yeah.
You know, can we get someone in post?
Blur eardrums.
I kind of wanted to go up there and grab it, but it would, no.
It's a collectible. 200th episode. Here we are. Another week.
Do you remember where they dropped those? It was at the
Nike Soho.
That was from Nike Soho.
Did you bring
around
that?
The time that they first opened.
Was that
no,
yours?
I didn't. What?
Oh, that's not yours?
Yeah, I don't know where
it's
we
not,
got that.
It's not mine. Nice piece
cool
of memorabilia.
Piece of
though.
History. That's yep. what we do. Make history every week. Right? A lot of history in this episode
wow.
coming up.
Yes.
I'm surprised you didn't say aloha instead of hello.
Oh. This, listen, this. This week, we have a big, big guest.
Yes.
Tons of history. I remember when I was an intern, seeing him from afar, I think calling in samples under Bradley Carbone when this guy was at Kicks Hawaii. So, yeah.
Yeah, Ian Ganoza is here. We're going to talk about his long, long history of brands like Converse, Nike, Adidas.
You called in samples from Hawaii?
I was calling in samples everywhere. Products@complex.com was my email.
Joe's putting in
didn't
work.
Didn't even give me the government.
What else did do we want to chat about? Government. What else do we want to chat about? I want to talk a little bit more Air Max DN as we always do.
Okay.
I want to get Welty's take on Bode Astro Grabbers now that we've seen some
oh
more
boy.
Of them. And also I want to complain about StockX. So, okay. You know, the usual suspects.
Yes, the usual suspects.
I know I use StockX way more than y'all.
I use it a lot.
To sell, though.
Oh, no.
Welty, do you ever sell on StockX anymore?
Not anymore. Yeah. Those days have come and gone.
The pain when you sell something and then you realize you listed the wrong thing and you don't have it.
What was it?
If you sell enough stuff, I'm not going to tell you. If you sell enough stuff on there, sometimes they'll let you live and you won't get hit with a fee when your order gets canceled. Yeah. And this time I was just like, I just let the emails roll in. They're like, you need to ship this to us. And this is totally on me. I'm not saying this is like legitimately a flaw in StockX. This is my mistake. I didn't have the shoes that I listed, but I think it's 15% of the price of the sale or $15, whichever one is higher.
Which one was higher?
They hit me with the 15%. Dude, StockX canceled my sale. I got like a $60 charge on my account.
How wait, are we damn. Gonna, we could break out the calculator.
Hate to see it.
how are we gonna dig ourselves out of that hole?
Hate to see it.
You might see some real struggle brand posts on my IG soon trying to recoup.
Talking about spending, someone who didn't have a problem with spending, Conor McGregor on the new episode of Sneaker Shopping. Please go check that out. Electric at the trophy case at Stadium Goods.
Still celebrating St. Patrick's Day a week later.
Yes.
Joe came back in for round two. Knockout. Okay. Or so how's my stance, Welty?
Oof.
the mic's in the way.
He'd be in a rear naked choke in 30 seconds, right?
I thought you were naked.
I thought you were doing like the thought you were doing like the Notre Dame mascot.
Oh, like the
fighting, yeah, fighting Irish. Good episode on.
Could we call it a great episode?
It is a great episode. Jake Gyllenhaal, Conor McGregor.
Yeah.
Next week, another banger. I know I keep saying it, but we're on a run, baby.
Why not?
Yeah, we're on a run.
Why not?
This guy tried to. What did you?
Insert some geopolitics into your friendly little sneaker show.
Yeah.
I wanted you to ask Conor McGregor about wearing Reebok because Conor McGregor wore Reebok for a number of years, was affiliated with them through UFC and. Reebok's most famous sneakers have the Union Jack flag on them, the British flag on them, and I thought that might be a little bit of a conflict of interest for such a proud Irishman as Conor McGregor. And in fact, I once had a really interesting, enlightening conversation with the Irish designer Robin Lynch, whose work I love, and she told me about how in her childhood, growing up in Ireland, the kids would cover up the British flag on their Reeboks with a bit of whiteout and draw an Irish flag over it. And I thought that was a beautiful story, and I offered it to you, and
listen, I take suggestions. I take a lot of them sometimes. But yeah.
Put it in the suggestion box.
Yeah, sometimes.
It's a black hole in there.
We don't, but yeah, good episode talking about.
I hope I get the chance to talk to Conor McGregor about that one day.
Absolutely.
Sit down with a cheeky pint. What is this bar called? What? Where they do the hip hop nights?
Old Forged Inn.
Yeah.
Maybe just launched a Forged Stout.
Yes.
The Forged Stout.
Some behind the scenes. biggest entourage. He had like his a bunch of companies. It, yeah. The Stadium Goods was packed that day.
You always pack them out.
You know it.
Like I said, Air Max DN.
Oh yeah. What else?
Oh, no, what an exciting shoe to talk
okay,
about.
Okay. No. This is. I want to talk about not talking about it.
Okay.
So I want to propose something to you, Wealthy.
Okay.
What if, since we're not that excited about the shoe, I think it's okay. You hate it, Joe. Do you care for the DN?
Indifferent.
Indifferent. What if we just agreed as an outlet to just not talk about
the DN?
You're doing
the exact
no,
opposite.
No, but yeah, but I want to have the conversation with you. Should we just ignore the DN for the rest of the year?
You can't do that.
Why not?
Just ignore it? What if something happens? We got to talk.
Well, I mean, if something happens, sure, right? But, I mean, we are making an editorial decision choosing to talk about it, right?
I know. I just think it'd be fun to, like, work against all Nike's marketing and brand spend on it and be like, you know what? As far as we're concerned, the Air Max DN doesn't exist.
Didn't you do an interview about it?
Yeah.
Well, okay, so we'll
do the one.
Didn't you play a role in the cog? Oh.
Well, listen, we wanted to review the shoe. We wanted to get the story straight from Nike, but if they're just going to slap a bunch of Volt colorways on it and industrial blue shades on there and things like that, then like, I don't think we need to talk about every... So should we put an official moratorium on the DN right here, right now?
Sure, unless there's something actually exciting about it. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not agreeing to that.
You're not? You're going to talk about the shoe?
I'll do what I want.
That's true. That you will do what he wants.
Joe's probably going to host the Air Max Day. Like. No.
Maybe. Why not? Air Max Day 2025?
Could happen. Right to the camera. Spike the lens.
There we go.
Spike the lens. What about the Bodie Astro Grabbers? We've seen a little bit more of them now, Wealthy.
Oh. The black one stinks, right?
Okay.
It's just
not. I like the black one better. But
the black one, like, reminds me of...
Yes.
I know everyone says it looks like a shoe that people played football in with like leather helmets.
Mm-hmm.
It just kind of reminds me of back in the day when my dad was like, hey, I got a pair of soccer shoes that you can wear, and goes into the basement and pulls out a pair of Patricks from like the early 80s or 70s, just like black leather.
That's how the Bodies make you feel.
Yeah. And they were a turf shoe as well. So it had a similar.
I feel like Io got them off, though.
I think she looked good in the sneakers. That helped convince me, although maybe I didn't need that much convincing. I've kind of been interested in the shoe from the start.
I think the white pair looks significantly cooler.
See, I have to disagree with you there. But I'm a leather sneaker guy.
That's not a cool
shoe. Give me a little bit of leather. Actually, give me a lot of leather.
How is China? We should just say, right? We're filming two in one day.
Yeah, we filmed this early. Yeah, we recorded this before I left for Complex Con Hong Kong, and I have to say, Complex Con Hong Kong was amazing.
Wow,
and delivered on every front, and I had an incredible experience in Hong Kong and got to know the local culture there and met a bunch of good people.
But should do your disclaimer just in case any news drops. And
yeah, right.
It's so funny in my mind, you throwing out like some sort of just like pretending that that everything was great. And then, I mean, fingers crossed.
Oh, God.
I don't make it back?
No.
No, but like some situation could have occurred that you have to like actually, not saying to discuss, just you don't know. Like,
yeah, no, I'm okay. At the time we're recording this, I'm really looking forward to going to Hong Kong for Complex Con China. I think it'll be an amazing experience. I'm sure when we come back, I will be recapping in earnest all the incredible stuff I did and saw and ate.
Yeah.
But we won't be back for a little bit because the week after this we have off. But yes, the PSA, like Joe said.
So yeah, we did. And if any news breaks, we'll get on it.
And we'll do fake Photoshops of it too.
We'll do some mock-ups. All fake narratives.
What else?
We have a great guest.
We have a great guest. So the banter is a little short because we wanted to get... If you don't know, you're going to know.
Let's bring on our guest.
Let's do it. Our guest on today's show is an industry veteran who's played every major position in the space. He is the co-founder of famed sneaker and streetwear stores like Kicks Hawaii in Honolulu and the iconic St. Alfred in Chicago. Over the span of his 25-plus years in the industry, he's held major product and marketing positions at Converse, Nike, and Adidas, working alongside Virgil Abloh, Tom Sachs, Tyler, the Creator, and Beyonce. Currently, he serves as Global Vice President and Creative Director of Pinnacle Product at Vans. Here to talk his extensive history, please welcome Ian Ganoza. Ian, thanks so much for taking the time. Welcome to the Complex Sneaker Show. We always, obviously, we have the sneaker cam, but what are you wearing on feet?
Half cab Vibrams.
Okay.
So these are the part of the OTW mainline. So obviously, OTW is tasked with working with collaborations and through entities and individuals, but we also have a very compelling mainline, and this is the first kind of release of that mainline. Yeah.
Awesome.
I'm doing Born and Raised SB Dunks. This is the first time I've actually put this shoe on my feet. This is such a good shoe. I think we messed up a little bit in leaving this shoe off of our top 10 last year. This is a beautiful sneaker.
Looks good.
Definitely better than Drake's.
Yes.
Sneakers. Ooh, rest in peace, Sponto.
Yes. Absolutely. Yes.
I'm doing the olive colorway of the undefeated Terra Umara. Nice. Did the black one, and now we're on to the olive.
You have them all?
I don't have them all. I have these and the black ones, but yeah.
I have them all.
Just doing Joe Fresh Goods 993s.
Okay.
Very nice.
Classic. Yeah. You know, something that's embedded in my mind, I don't want to get too all over the place, but you guys did the 3 feet high Vans back in the day, right?
We did.
Kicks
did.
High. I remember it was a DQM that was like a, like chef,
the butcher paper, right?
Chef pants. Yeah, like, mm-hmm. And then I just remember Kicks High was part of that pack.
Yeah, it was Kicks Hawaii Huff at the time and DQM. And we kind of all grew up together. And well, obviously they're from New York, but when they would come to San Francisco where I was based, we would click up and go skateboarding. And then when we opened up the shops, we just kept it moving.
Yeah, and I remember just early Complex Magazine days and, you know, Bradley working with you. And that's like you first got on my radar. So happy to have you here again.
Thank you guys for having
some
me.
Some years later, right?
Yeah. This guy has such a long, long history. Yes. You're one of the guys in the industry who I've always wanted to talk to. And I'm happy we finally have a chance.
No, I think the first time I heard of your name is like on the Hypebeast blog. Do you have a Hypebeast blog back in the day?
Yeah,
like
before social media and all that. Yeah. There was a blog that Kevin was doing at Hypebeast, and I was one of the bloggers.
And like Lupe had a blog as well, and then on Paris Tokyo, he shouts out you, and then like half the other people who are on the Hypebeast blogs at the the time.
I met Lupe and Verge and that whole clique when we opened up St. Alfred in Chicago. Yeah.
Ian says aloha.
Yeah, aloha.
Was that a big moment for you when he put your name in a song?
It was unexpected, but I love Lou. He's still one of my favorite lyricists. Yeah. You know, I think a lot of people's favorite lyricists, and I also love Chicago. You know, I think that city really embraced St. Alfred and myself personally when I was there, and it was a blessing to kind of meet the creatives there and everyone else. You know, obviously like Don C and Verge and Nigel.
Virgil was in the mix even back then.
Yeah, actually, Virgil stepped through the doors probably in the first couple weeks, and he actually worked with me on photo shoots and graphics and all that. You know, so
at St. Alfred.
Yeah, for St. Alfred.
So they're doing like RSVP Gallery at the same time.
RSVP way after that.
Yeah. What was that crew like in the early stages of Chicago, which St. Alfred, like kind of in the streetwear sense, would have been? What was that crew like?
It was good, man. Yeah. Like, I think, what I always said about Chicago is, the community was already thriving already there. It's just that nobody was really like servicing them in that way, right? And the creative community was extremely vibrant, as far as the artists and the musicians and everyone else. And I mean, in the first month you have like, everyone from like Twista and R. Kelly's guys coming through, the Don C and Verge and Hollywood Holt and Mano that whole lot, right? And Lupe and Chili and all those guys were falling through the spot. So it really became this hub immediately. And, being from Hawaii, it was, it was kind of like a stark contrast from what I was used to. But I also loved the music scene from the style of hip hop, but also the house music scene, which is amazing there, right? And, I was from Frankie Knuckles to that whole thing. I was like, to really kind of ingrain myself in that community, it was a time that I definitely cherish. Love Chicago. Yeah.
Big Jordan boom back then. Was that what they were coming in for and stuff like that?
Yeah, I think so. But I think also what was interesting is they were coming in for a lot of the apparel. We were bringing in a lot of Japanese streetwear brands from Visvim to Neighborhood to Double Taps. And that wasn't really available there at that time. And Lupe was a big fan of that whole like community and all those brands. So, we clicked up pretty early on, and we were also bringing in, we brought in a lot of vintage sneakers.
Okay.
So when we first opened up, it was like wheat Air Force Ones. Oh. And, you know, we had like a treasure chest that we kind of.
So you were like reselling shoes at the store while having the retail accounts at the same time?
Yeah, absolutely.
Was Nike okay with that or?
I don't know. we did it anyway.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think it was, again, it was like the community wanted what they wanted.
Were you getting those shoes from like overseas and trading, or it was just like local sourcing?
No, it was just stuff that we've always had. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I think it was, you know, I mean, I was a big collector, and so were. We had a consortium of friends and people that kind of did that, and yeah, that's kind of how we opened up. We opened up in the city.
Were you guys going and like cracking mom and pop stuffs, anything like that?
No, I mean, I was doing a little bit of that back in the day.
Yeah,
but
clear out the basement.
When we opened up, it was, you know, we opened up with accounts and again, we didn't open up with a gang of vintage, but yeah, enough where people would come through and be like, oh, look what they got on the shelf, and then it started to like word of mouth and
yeah,
kind of kept it moving. But you know, there was great people like the Dave Jeffs of the world,
yes,
and all that,
shout out
right?
To Dave
so,
Jeff.
You know, yeah, shout out to Jeff, Dave, you know, so it was, yeah, like the, again, like I need to get back. I love Chicago.
You talk about like those days in the treasure chest. I was talking to this guy in the morning and you did an interview with Being Hunted in 2004. Mm-hmm. And what they asked you, what are your top 10 sneakers at the moment? Listen to this lineup.
This is ready? A killer line.
Listen
oh,
to this.
Takes me, yeah.
Listen
this
to
is.
This
is beautiful.
Lineup.
This is,
yeah. HTM Wovens,
yes.
HTM Air Force One, a favorite of him and I.
Both of us, yeah.
Supreme Dunk Highs, Van Slip-Ons, Aloha Dunk, Huff Air Max One, Mayfly, Jordan 3, Olympic Air Force One, another classic, and rubber flip-flops, which I think was just like regional. But that roster of sneakers just takes me back to a time of like just amazing product. Do you think it was around that time of St. Alfred?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we opened up in 06. So we were already in development of like mm-hmm. kind of hunting that and doing that whole thing. So, and you know, the Aloha Dunks were through Kicks Hawaii.
Yes.
Right? So that was kind of through that. But you know, it's funny you mentioned the rubber flip flops because, you know, as a youth, I wasn't really into sneakers.
Okay.
I'm a Hawaii kid, you know, mm-hmm. so I wore flip-flops and rubber sleepers and locals and things like that, you know. It wasn't until I got into skateboarding and basketball that I really got aware and focused on sneakers. And, you know, Vans was one of them, obviously,
of
with skateboarding was one of my first kind of brands that I connected with. And then, you know, through basketball, it was Avias.
Mm, yeah.
And then, you know, I was short, so I, you know, Spud Webb,
okay,
Pony City Wings,
there we go,
things like that, right? So I was always, it was always through those two loves of basketball and skateboarding that kind of connected me to sneakers.
Your time at Kicks Hawaii, and you mentioned the Aloha Dunk, how mm-hmm. did that shoe come about?
At the time, the Dunks were kind of on a little wave, and you know, Nike was kind of talking to us and asking us what we would like to do, and you know, the Dunk was obviously like a focus at that point that we wanted to do. And, you know, the whole narrative of that Dunk was about the environment of Hawaii. So the color tones of, you know, the aina, which is like the land, and then
the woven part, the lauhala.
Yeah, the lauhala weave, which is a particular type of weave that Hawaiian artisans use and craft. And, you know, those were kind of like the inspiration points. And yeah, and it was, you know, an homage and an ode to my home.
Was the release for it hectic? Did you guys have to put a bunch of procedures in place to get the shoes out, or was it not at that point yet?
It was a different time,
yeah.
You know, but yeah, it was hectic for sure. And we actually coordinated a special release with Foot Patrol at the time with Fraser and mm-hmm. Michael overseas. And
Fraser Cook, Michael Kaufman.
Yeah.
The people,
history.
All these names are just like legends.
Yeah, yeah. So we did that with those guys across the pond, so to speak. And yeah, that was the release.
Was there a sneaker scene in Hawaii, in Honolulu at all before y'all opened up? And what did that look like?
Absolutely,
prior to you
absolutely.
Up
you know, I think, you know, in the first week, you know, some dear friends of mine, this guy Blaze Sato and Chris Cam and Carrie, DJ XL, like we're already kind of like deep within that community, and you know, Nocturnal Boys, these DJ crews that were, you know, they were kind of moving around, and they already were very kind of knowledgeable and into the scene. It's just that they never had places to buy them, you know. And I think as a kid growing up, that was my life experience. But my father and mom would take me on a trip to quote unquote the mainland, you know, once a year. And when I go to San Francisco, I go to Harputz, and I drop in and grab some Addies and things like that. Or, you know, I was actually also heavy into like ska scene and went up to San Francisco and go to Nana and pick up my Docs and Monkey Boots and stuff. So I was always like, it wasn't just sneakers, just footwear in general. I was always, you know, kind of into once that kind of sparked.
I think it's interesting too, because you do the Aloha Dunk and that shoe like becomes a grail. I remember being on Nike Talk at the time, and that was like one of those shoes that if someone had it, they were like kind of really into it. And then they do the Hawaii Dunks a few years later. Were you like really into that one, or did you have any involvement in that at all?
No, but it was done by a dear friend of mine, James Arizumi, you know, a fellow Loke, fellow Hawaiian boy. And, you know, we're good friends to this day. And, you know, I think when you think of Hawaii, you don't think of sneakers, right? But I think, you know, that there's such a rich cultural heritage there, and some of the best storytellers that I've came across, especially some, you know, dear family friends of mine, Sig Zane family, you know, they're amazing storytellers. And I think what James did with that dunk was incredible. Yeah.
The Pele Dunks. I spoke to James actually before you came on here, and he was talking about your shared history in the industry. And he said that it was so important that for both of you, the root was skateboarding. He told me, quote, skateboarding was the savior, the inspiration, the teacher for both of you.
Yeah, I think, again, like, you know, until skateboarding came along for me, I didn't really care about sneakers. Yeah. It wasn't a thing. But, you know, obviously, like, you got kids skating barefoot in Hawaii, but I wasn't trying to do that.
Barefoot?
Yeah, absolutely.
And they can actually rip?
Yeah, I mean, there's this kid Cully and a few other guys that would like be skating bowls and pools barefoot.
With grip? Do you still have grip tape?
Yeah.
That sounds painful.
What was the first like? Super heavy. What were the first like skate shoes you were skating in?
I was skating in Skate Highs.
Okay.
For sure, that was my thing. Eras, and then later on, half caps.
Okay.
Yeah.
The Vans presence in Hawaii is such a cool story too, through all the surfing competitions and things like that.
Yeah, you know, I think also, you know, through like even like, you know, the Venice guys always had a connection to Hawaii as well, like through Scott Oster or Jeff Hartstall or these types of people, right? And Vans, you know, also the surfing thing, right? So Vans is also very supportive of the surfing community, and to this day still supports Hawaii in that way through like various contests and local grassroots kind of thing. So Vans is out of like all the brands, I think they're the most connected to Hawaii.
For sure. Talk about skateboarding. Early on, you work at iPath.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting for me because I remember I watched like growing up skateboarding, I watched the Reel to Reel video, and you guys like Matt Rodriguez and Matt Field, and they were all wearing the iPaths at the time, and I was like, I need those shoes, right? And I remember I had Thrasher magazine, and there was like an iPath ad in the back of it, and this is like 2001 maybe. And I'm like trying to get the shoes, and all there is like a phone number to like, there wasn't like a website or anything. You had to like call it, and I guess it like went to an apartment in San Francisco or something like that. We could never get a hold of, like, never get someone to answer the phone. And then I guess
they were doing other things.
Yeah. And I think it was like, it finally came around to like 2000, and it might've been 2001 or 2002, where I think like the distribution spread out a little bit more, and they were in Journeys, and I got like the white and navy high tops with the strap.
Yeah. The cats.
Yeah. On it. Yeah. But just being, I was so hyped on it at the time.
Or Grasshopper.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cause there was that and like the wallaby looking one at the same time too, but I was just so hyped on.
Yeah. I was kind of their like first kind of art director. So I did all their ads and catalogs, and I moved to San Francisco to kind of chase being a graphic artist and graphic designer, but also, you know, it was skating, right? That back in the early 90s, that was kind of the wave and the spot. So that's what led me to San Francisco, and eventually meeting the New Yorkers that would come when it was raining or snowing out here. Yeah. So, you know, Huff. And
did you first meet Huff in San Francisco?
I did.
What was that relationship like?
A near and dear one. You know, he was a best friend. He's the best man at my wedding.
Wow.
When we were starting to talk about opening sneaker shops, we were on a curb. I remember the day, and you know, he was like, hey, this is kind of what I want to do. And I was like, look, like, and this was after us kind of looking for sneakers. I think we like bought Spiridons or something that day.
OG Spiridons.
Yeah, love that. And I said, yeah, you know, something I want to do too. And you know, back then there was a little more of a code amongst amongst the community where it's like, hey, I'm going to open up here. You open up over there. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to go back to Hawaii and do it. And he opened up in San Francisco. It was the same thing when why we chose Chicago for St. Alfred. You know, Eddie and James were doing the thing in L.A. Stash and Futura were doing the thing in New York.
So, right? Like you said, sorry to interrupt, there was like a code, like, you guys are doing this, I'm going over here.
Yeah, it was
an important thing.
It was simpler times, and it was an honor amongst, you know, friends, mm-hmm. right? And it was a respect thing. And I think it wasn't so much of a business back then, right? So I think it was just, not to be corny, but it was kind of out of the love for the thing. You know, and I think through that is why we chose actually my home turf, Hawaii, mm-hmm. and also, you know, I had obviously a regional pride kind of thing, right? Yeah. And Chicago was one because I didn't really know anyone out there, and two, once we went out there, I just kind of fell in love with the city and the people, you know.
Did those regional differences ever like bump up? Like, did you come to Chicago and people were like, what are you doing here? You know?
You know, I think there was a little bit when I first rolled up, you know, island boy coming to the city to try and do that. But, you know, immediately I kind of, you know, I was just myself. And I think I wasn't trying to like front or be somebody I wasn't. And I think like the community respected that, and I was very respectful of the community as well. I mean, it's a tough town.
Yeah.
You know, it's a tough city, right? Definitely. And but I immediately kind of very fortunately met the right people, and to this day St. Alfred keeps it moving.
Did you get connected with Nick Diamond back in the day, being in like the whole San Francisco skate and
sneaker scene? Actually did one of his first ads as a graphic designer.
Oh, wow.
And so I worked with Nick many years ago. I remember him before his first trade show, and I designed like a flyer and some ads for him. Shout out to Nicky.
Yeah. You remember the time when the diamonds came out? Like, what was that for you?
Yeah, I remember that. We sold them, you know. I was happy for Nick. Yeah. I mean, Nick was always, you know, a great creative, always had good ideas, and obviously, like, you know, goes down as one of the quote-unquote grails, right?
Yeah.
So
huge lineup for those. Did you have a procedure in place by then?
Absolutely.
Raffle tickets and things like that.
Nah, actually, you know, we just first come, first serve.
Yeah,
it was just always that's kind of how we moved. Yeah.
Are sneakers more expensive in Hawaii, being that I think that, like, I've just heard that, like, things in general are more expensive in Hawaii than, like, the standard retail price, or is it just?
No. I mean, I think they were pretty much MSRP.
Okay.
You know, I mean, nowadays, nothing's MSRP.
Right.
But, you know, there's a dip, obviously. But, you know, back when we were doing it, it wasn't like we were overcharging premiums or doing any of that. You know, again, it was really about, you know, making sure the community had what the kids on the mainland had or kids on the mainland wanted.
I feel like in that era, though, like when you went into some of the sneaker stores, it was like if you were cool with the people, you'd kind of get like a like the homie hookup price.
Oh, no doubt.
And then if you like didn't, they'd be like 10 bucks over.
No, like, I think the
you guys must have taxed sometimes.
The deal was more is we would put them on the side for you. So you didn't have to line up. You know, that was really kind of, and that's how we took care of, you know, the crew and the select, but everybody paid, you know. And again, it, you know, there was no goats or stock X's or, you know, a little bit of an eBay way. But a lot of it, as you guys know, was a little more community on Nike Talks. And it was more about trading than selling, right? So you would trade with people in the UK for JD exclusive sports or Atmos ones or Mita ones.
Were you trading a lot back then?
I would have a guy that would trade some for me.
But, you're like, I can't be in the room with
it. Well, just like, you know, I was trying to, you know, we opened up two stores in Honolulu, then we opened up another store in Guam, and then we opened up a Stussy franchise in Guam, and then it led to Chicago. So quickly it came to like five doors. And that's kind of when, to be honest, is when I started talking to Nike about, because 2008 came and there was a big kind of mortgage recession
going
on, right? Mm-hmm. And when that hit, we had plans to develop more stores. But, you know, when we saw that coming, we said, hey, like, we're not going to stop any more biz dev, kind of keep it moving. And that really is what I was really interested in. I like coming up with the names. I like evolving the business. And when that stopped, it turned into like more managing employees and things like that, the stuff that I wasn't so interested in. And that's kind of when I was talking back and forth to Nike, and an opportunity came up at Converse, and you know, talked to my wife about it, and yeah, made the jump. And they were starting their energy program at the time called First String, and that's kind of when I jumped into that.
Were you around for the Lupe Converse patent leather?
Yes, I was.
Another one that's embedded in my brain, the Chuck Taylor, I remember. Yeah. He like, I think he wore them.
It's like the Jordan 11 looking one, right?
It's all black patent leather with red.
Yeah, tuxedo joints.
Yes, yes. Yeah. I remember that. Great era. One question about the Kicks High store. Do you remember any celebrities coming in like on their trips to Hawaii that you remember during that era?
I mean, there definitely were a few.
Any fun ones that stick out?
Hmm.
I went in 2012. I don't think I left that a big mark though.
My boy on the wall.
Yeah, I would remember that. You know, I mean, my memory's so fuzzy. We'd have a lot of like Japanese designers come through. But as far as like entertainment, celebrities and all that.
It's never like Jeezy's on tour and he's in Hawaii.
Yeah, okay. I don't know. I mean, we did a lot of music things there as well, but you know, I was also kind of like, I was going out a lot back then. Okay. So yeah, my brain's a little fuzzy.
Got you.
Yeah. There's a photo, I don't know where he would have got him, but of Sacha Baron Cohen in the Aloha Dogs from Kicks Hawaii.
Okay, so that, all right.
Yeah, I had a few people send me those, which was quite funny.
That's that's a good one.
Seriously, though, I do have a fond memory of being there in 2012. I think it was a Black Friday sale.
Okay.
I think I picked up a pair of Missoni Chuck Taylors there for like $40. And also a very memorable Kicks Hawaii shoe for me was a Tiger Camo Converse.
Okay, yeah, I actually would have been gone by then because in 08 is kind of... 08 is when I went to Converse and officially kind of stepped away from the business probably about 2010, right around there.
And what about Lalo? Can you explain Lalo? Because I feel like that's a store that people never really talk about. It's such an interesting one, and they carried Supreme for a time. They were one of the only places to carry Supreme ever outside of Supreme stores.
You did your homework, huh? yeah, I opened up Lalo with a dear friend of mine, Jules Gayton, and Jules... OG skater and Supreme Stussy Crew guy. He moved to Honolulu with his wife, and you know, we got connected by a dear friend named Giovanni Estevez, like one of the OGs at Supreme. You know, Jules is an amazing vintage hunter. You know, so like, you know, incredible knowledge from vintage luxury to vintage Americana to vintage everything, you know, the it was spelled L-E-I-L-O-W, so it was, you know, obviously a nod to Hawaii. And we opened up with Supreme and Neighborhood and Double Taps and Visvim and
a big deal.
Yeah, at the time it was a big deal, and you know, that was more of a labor of love and being fans of those brands. You know, growing up in Hawaii, I would go to Japan quite often. It's only 6 hours away, right? But it's the same distance from me to go from Hawaii to California. So I would go to Japan quite a lot. And then we opened up with vintage, and it was vintage Dukana Moku Hawaiian shirts and vintage Levi's and, you know, vintage Cartier and these types of things. So it was an interesting mix. And, you know, that was all through the curation of Jules, you know, and that was really a labor of love. Shop didn't make a lot of money, but it was still to this day one of my favorite stores in the world. That and the old Number 9 store in New York. That was always another big one for mine too.
You briefly mentioned the Stussy Guam. I just always thought that was interesting because I remember looking up on a map like 10 plus years ago, all the Stussy chapter stores. I'm like, wow, there's a store in Guam, because it's just like the furthest place away from you know, the United States. And I have to imagine that Stussy Guam t-shirt has to be like the rarest, you know, like Stussy chapter t-shirt, because I know people try to collect all of them.
The thing about Guam is, well, one, it's really beautiful. Yeah. And the people there are amazing. And it's really close to Japan. It's like 3 hours. So I think a lot of vacationing Japanese or Koreans or Chinese, they choose Guam. And it's a gorgeous place. Like, you know, and we opened up right in Tumon Bay, which is kind of like the Waikiki of Guam. And we had like some prime real estate there. You know, our partners had a great real estate holdings at the time. And a friend of ours, Rich Cho, kind of connected us, and you know, fellow Guam boy, and yeah, it was. We decided to, you know, talking to David Sinatra and at the time Frank, and you know, we opened up Stussy.
Do you still have any of the Guam shirts? Did they make a Stussy Guam?
I'm sure. I still have some someplace. I got a storage facility back in Hawaii with everything.
The Stussy Kuala Lumpur t-shirt is one of your favorites.
That was like, we went to Kuala Lumpur and there was like the Stussy store there. And I remember the first time I skipped on buying the Kuala Lumpur Stussy shirt. And I'm like, that's so stupid that I skipped out on this because you can't buy it anywhere else,
you know? Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay, so we're going to a few different places in your timeline here, but I want to get back to Converse 2008. You said when you went to Chicago, that was a bit of a culture shock for you, but I imagine being in Boston felt even more intense.
Boston was an extreme culture shock.
Yeah,
it was extreme culture shock. But, you know, I was there to work, right? And my thing was I was always curious on the other side of the fence, being an independent, and if I could, like, I'm also competitive. I wanted to kind of make a dent and I wanted to see what I could do out there. And, you know, I was working with an amazing team at the time. You know, shout out Matt Sleep, Nate Joe, Ben Edwards, Magnus Wedhammer, and
big names. Matt Sleep's still there.
Yeah.
Nate Job is that's New Guards group now.
But the streetwear scene at the time in Boston was like just so happening too. Mm-hmm. So I imagine you kind of felt at home with all that.
Yeah, you know, Jay and those cats at Bodega and Tarek and Dion, Frank the Butcher, Concepts back then, right? Like, you know, all of those guys and you know, they embraced me, you know, real quickly. And but you know, I was there to work and work on this first string thing and that's when we immediately started to like rock up partnerships. You know, we developed the Chuck 60s that influenced the Chuck 70, right? And we got that insight from Ray Calcubo, you know, at Comme des Garçons, who wanted to make a 60s period correct kind of Chuck Taylor. And that went on to inform, obviously, the monster that it is today for Converse, which is the Chuck 70, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, but some of those early partnerships are still some of my favorites, from Jose Parla to Dr. Damien Hirst. Yeah, DR.
Wasn't there like one that was like all Band-Aids?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep, the Band-Aid one.
Yeah.
Clot Pro Leathers, I think, were a few years later. Yeah. I love that one.
Yeah, we worked on those too.
Is there a project from that time at Converse that you're most proud of?
Probably working with the Sig Zane family.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, they are close family friends of mine. Mm. You know, they named them my son, right? Like, you know, I got a deep connection with them. So, you know, Hawaii's always a soft spot and always home for me. So.
Was that before or after the Fragment Chucks that had, they're like the all red pair with like the red toe cap on it?
And the black one with the Friends of Fit, yeah.
Yeah, working with Hiroshi as well during that
I love those.
Yeah.
I wore those black Chucks a ton.
Dude, the red Chucks, I wanted those so bad back then. Oh my God.
Yeah, and then obviously working with Takahiro Miyashita from Number 9.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think those are probably one of my favorites.
Is it like the running shoe too with like the hairy suede on it?
Yeah, you guys know all that.
So many, I mean, hits. And then did you end up at Nike directly after Converse or?
Directly after, you know, I think Converse, Nike just kind of hit me up and was like, hey, you know, whatever, we're trying to reset kind of the energy thing here. And,
what year was that?
Let me see. 2011 or 12, somewhere around there. I think it was at Converse for about 3 years. Yeah, and also, you know, Boston's cold, man. You know, it was a little much for me. I spent a lot of time in New York during those years because I would just catch a train on the weekends and kind of go down there, and that was when I really kind of got to move around New York a lot, which is great.
Was it ever a question for you whether or not you would go to Nike, or it was too big a thing?
You know, I never really thought about it until they started courting me. Obviously, like, you know, it was within the Inc. ecosystem,
right?
But when they hit me up, and, you know, for me it was, and I got hit up a few things on different propositions, but right, wrong, or indifferent, I always just loved this space, right? You know, and working within the energy space and within the collaboration space, and also with pushing innovation narratives and creating new forms and new expressions. And I think when Greg Thompson at the time, Tomo, hit me up to kind of came over, I just clicked with him. To this day, he's still one of my favorite people.
Yeah.
And it was good to kind of go and cook with him over for a while.
Were you there for Air Yeezy 2 during that period? You said like 2011, 2012?
Yes, I was.
How big was that?
Yeah, I was there for Red Octobers. Wow. And you know, it was funny because I still have a pair, and we made some for Baby North where there's like
the rubber pairs.
Injection molded kind of Crocs looking kind of vibes.
What was that time like, those early years of you getting to Nike and like projects like that must have been? compared to like to the other ones?
I think it was a moment. Getting within those walls is polarizing for a lot of people, mm-hmm. you know, but what I really liked about it even more than the brand were the people I met mm-hmm. and I worked with. Those are the things to this day that I cherish, the designers and the thinkers and the thought partners that I had there. I thought that really kind of challenged me, and I think in my way, I challenged them. Together, we got to places and projects and product expressions that kind of stand the test of time. And I got really close with Fraser at that mm-hmm. moment as well, from Foot Patrol days to Nike days. And so, yeah, it was a
What's Fraser time. Like? Because to me, like you, he's somebody who's been in this industry like for so long, but a bit mm-hmm. of an enigma, and somebody who you don't really see in the public that much, but has influenced and affected so much.
You know, just like myself, I'm kind of a behind the scenes guy. Mm-hmm. I'm not, you know, my IG's private. I kind of stay behind the thing. I kind of let the work, you know, to me, the beauty's in the work, mm. you know, like that's the good stuff. And I think, you know, if Fraser was here, he'd probably say the same thing. You know, he loves the work, and he's a, you know, I think both of us are really curious about culture and space and those types of things. And we love fashion and we love footwear. Fraser's one of the good ones. Yeah.
That must have been such a big transition though, because, you know, you talk about early on, like Kicks High days, Hypebeast blog days, like kind of mm-hmm. like pre-social media, where like you were viewed at some point, I guess, as just like a streetwear cool guy, you know, to like the masses of kids online and maybe in person. And then social media, Instagram following didn't matter. And then all mm-hmm. of a sudden, now that's all that matters, you know, but you had like such a big reputation in the space that maybe you didn't even feel the need to have like a reputation online.
From the social media standpoint, I think it matters to people who think it matters.
Yeah.
You know, I think for me, it doesn't really matter for me. I think, and you know, for me, an opinion is only as worthy as the person it comes from. and it's really about like, you know, it's I like my clique small, you know, and I like very personal kind of interactions and dialogues and conversations. And, you know, a lot of the friends that I met back then are still friends to this day. But I love meeting new creatives. I love meeting new quote unquote disruptors mm-hmm. and that have like unique points of view. And I think, you know, that there's, I think that that's what I really like about this space, is being able to interact and meet new creatives. And Nasi works with ones that I've also revered over the years. The social media thing is interesting, because I think what it did was make people very aware of photography and marketing, right? And which I think is great. And I love that, you know, what the youth is doing today with it is quite amazing, you know? But for myself personally, I didn't grow up in that era or that wave, right? So I never really fully adopted it, but you know, I use social media mostly to stay connected to friends and to meet new people. That's kind of my thing.
It must be nice to not. I wish my brain could free me of being shut those off.
Yeah. Well, you know, also, you know, I don't have my own brands anymore and these types of things. So I think that's a lot of what social media is for, whether it's personal brands or brands that you own or operate, to really kind of get the word out. So
you mentioned Red October, and I just remember that release weekend. Like, we all talked about it here many times when that shoe dropped that February Sunday morning, but. It was also like one of the most hyped Nike weekends of all time too, because at the same time the Tiffany High dropped too, and it was like a two-part, you know, release.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I don't even remember it. It was so long ago. Obviously I remember the waves that it meant and the cultural impact, right? But yeah, I mean, I've been very fortunate to be a part of a lot of like amazing projects over the years, and that's definitely one of them.
HTM?
One of my favorites, yeah.
What stuff did you work on with those guys?
I can't even remember the exact shoes, but I remember specifically, you know, working with Hiroshi, and obviously Mark had a heavy hand in it, and Tinker as well, right? But my favorites to this day that is not the ones I even worked on. It's the Wovens. Like those are my jams.
Such a special time in footwear.
Yes.
Yeah. Woven HTM, or like we were saying, HTM Air Force ones. Like I almost brought out I have the HTM Terry Humara sitting in my desk, but
yeah,
we'll save those for another day. Yeah. Were you around for the first? I know, again, just like all the people you've worked with. It's, Tom Sachs. Like, were you around for the first Tom Sachs sneaker, the Nike Craft shoe in 2012?
Yes, I was.
Mm-hmm. How did that go?
Yeah, amazing. Dyneema airbags, like the whole thing, right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. So yeah, it was an amazing shoe. There's even some stuff that didn't came out that's really, really crazy.
These, really?
Like mid Air Max kind of things. And
yeah, you see those in photos sometimes, mm-hmm. from, I think there were a handful of images. And even like the apparel, I always wanted to get that, it was like a gold jacket, right? Or like the
green parka, like, yeah, almost like a fishtail kind
of. The backpack that you could pack up. Did you go to the space camp that he had where you had to like complete it to win the shoes? For the Mars
2.0, right?
2.0. I did not go to the space camp. I was sick that day.
Oh, you would have won.
I would. Yeah. I would have been there at the space camp for sure. Big. One of my biggest regrets. We'll call it that.
Yeah. Listen, you can't pick when you get sick or not.
the Comme des Garçons relationship is an interesting one too, because they're one of those brands that Nike Inc., Nike Jordan, and Converse go back to now and again, but it's kind of unclear to me like how that actually works. Like, how does Nike actually interface with a brand as big as CDG? And is there a dedicated team at a Nike that talks to the people at CDG? What's that relationship
like? Yeah, I mean, you know, Ray and Adrian are pretty hands-on.
Really?
You know, even the Vans projects that we work at, they're extremely hands-on. You know, as big of a behemoth as they are quite small in how they operate and quite close. Yeah.
Interesting.
I think that's actually really interesting to me, because I guess there was always just a perception that, you know, that Ray didn't like design the shoes herself, and there was just like a team doing it, and it just kind of got signed off on or something like that. But
nothing gets done without Ray's.
Yeah.
Like, okay. Yeah,
really?
Yeah. Yeah. She is the master. Yeah.
How much time did you spend at Nike during that stint? I know it was
Let's see. I went from Converse to Nike for a few years, and then my son was being born, and I wanted to raise him by the beach.
Mm-hmm.
And it was either going back home or going to California. And that's when I was going back to I decided to land in California, and that's when they said, hey, like, we want you to, Converse would like you to kind of come back, and mm-hmm. and you know, they wanted a stronghold in
wait, they got a beach in Oregon.
Yeah, they got a beach in Oregon. Yeah. A little cold out there. So I joined Converse again, and that's when my son was born. My son was born in 2014. So we moved out there during that time, and that's when you know, Converse wanted me to work on kind of like a West Coast kind of stronghold and attack, you know, and that's kind of where the Dr. Wu's and the Born and Raised and the Tyler's and those things kind of came about.
How were those projects like on the second stint of Converse, you know, Dr. Wu and Tyler? Like, seeing Tyler, that was probably the ground up, basically, right?
Yeah, I think it was a good time. You know, I worked with an artist, Callie DeWitt, mm-hmm. as well, when we were out there. Yeah, it was good, man. And, you know, it was interesting time, because, you know, a few key people kind of joined the brand at that time. You know, Julian Kahn and Middleman, mm-hmm. right? Like, these types of things. So yeah, I enjoyed the time there. But it was short-lived, because that's when, you know, 2017 hits and Ye's at Addy, right?
And then. So how did that Converse to Adidas go?
That's when, yeah, I got the call, like, hey, you know, let's,
yeah, cook again.
Yeah. So I went back, and that's when Mr. Abloh comes out with the 10, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is it Wex hitting you up at all to work on that, or
Wex?
Yeah, at Adidas.
No, that's no. I mean, I actually met Wex at Converse.
Right. Way back.
Back in the day. He actually worked on, shout out to Mr. Wexler. Mm-hmm. I worked with him on my Kicks Hawaii and my own kind of solo red kind of mm-hmm. shoe with him. Yeah, I love John. He's amazing. I don't have to tell you guys. But no, during that time, I wasn't speaking with him when he went to Adidas and you know, obviously pulled off like one of the greatest signs, right? I went back to Nike, and that's when, you know, we got together a small team. And, you know, again, the Nate Jobs of the world, the Frazier Cooks and all of that. And you know, some of the great leadership there, that's to this day. Chris Wright, like, I love Chris as well. You know, it's to this day one of my dear friends. There's a lot of good people that
when Chris Wright's like leading all of footwear, Jordan brand now.
Yeah, like, yeah, he is, you know, again, like, yeah, I love that guy.
So Virgil and them start cooking at Nike, and that's when you come back into the fold.
Yes. Yeah.
Got it. So you were there for the 10.
Yeah, I came in at the tail end of that. Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. How big was that project for Converse with the Chuck Taylor?
The Chuck Taylor part? Yeah, it was a big one. I think, you know, it was the outlier, right?
Yeah.
Of that whole thing. And arguably one of the ones that people most kind of were drawn to.
It was like one of the hardest ones to make too,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Virgil did his thing, you know. And again, I came at the tail end of that, you know, that was already kind of...
Paul Mittelman was working on that, I think.
That was kind of already in play with that whole crew. But it was good to get reacquainted with him, you know, because, you know, ever since Chicago, I hadn't kind of worked with him, so...
Do you remember him trying to put the... What did he want to do? Put the Jordan swoosh on the Converse or vice versa? Didn't he want to do that?
I think originally he had wanted to do a Nike swoosh on the Converse, right?
Yeah, he did. And actually there was an artist, his name is escaping me, but that was doing it in Los Angeles already, which was quite interesting.
Maybe it was Mike from Chinatown Market.
There's the Chinatown Market. I think LeBron wore him back in the day.
Maybe.
But, you know, I think... I remember the first time going into Union here and buying Louis Vuitton, bootleg AF1s, right?
Yeah.
Wow. Those kind of things. So,
way back, yeah.
Yeah.
It's so interesting, too, to see these people come back around. You've stayed in touch with Virgil from those early Chicago days? Or
a little bit when he had RSVP and all that. You know, when I would go to Chicago, I would see him. And obviously, like... you know, seeing his trajectory and his heights is nothing short of amazing. Like, they broke the mold when they made him.
Yeah,
definitely.
I remember at the time I had written a story for Complex, kind of going around that Nike had picked up Virgil because they lost Kanye and they needed him to like fill in that like hype gap at the time.
Yeah, I'm not sure about what the narrative in the story was, but I know that, you know, Frazier and Cristiano were the two biggest kind of supporters of you know, bringing in Virgil at that time. And when I got there, it was just kind of getting reacquainted with an old friend and kind of kept it moving.
Cristiano Fagnini, he's the CEO at Off-White now, I think.
At New Guards.
New Guards, excuse me. Yeah, owner group.
Yeah, another dear friend and another amazing individual.
Yeah, absolutely. Didn't you work on something with Frank Ocean and Nike at some point?
There was a little something.
What was that like? What can you give us?
We had a meeting.
Okay.
Talked a little bit. Nothing never really kind of came out of it, but obviously like a massive fan and incredible creative. And, you know, I mean, there's a lot of those stories, man, about people coming through the
stuff
halls
that
and
never
the walls
quite materialized.
That kind of never materialized. You
There was one shoe that I heard a rumor that Nike Waffle Trainer 2 SP, where it ended up in the market and people were like, this was actually a Frank Ocean shoe, but I never knew for certain. Maybe that would have been after your time with him.
You'll never know.
Yeah.
were people at Nike, were they like hyped on that song that he did, the Nike song, or was that like a thing?
Yeah, I'm sure. But I think it was just more of like, you know, I think a lot of this energy space is about trailblazers, right? And not just innovation of product, but innovative individuals, right? And I think that's kind of what, you know, kind of draws this space for that. I think, you know, even at Vans, like, you know, a lot of things I learned over the years and a lot of things that I'm curious about is to this day, you know, and a lot of it was always informed to me by skateboarding. Mm-hmm. You know, I think like skateboarders are people that naturally kind of step over the line. Right, you got to think about when skateboarders came about to like look at a pool and say like, you know, I'm going to drain that thing and I'm going to skate it. Like the creative,
that's
process,
real innovation. We
yeah,
use this
that,
word a lot.
That, that's
in the
true
industry,
thinking, but... you know. And I use this analogy a lot where I say, hey, like, you know, skateboarders can look at a bench and see a million and one possibilities, where a pedestrian sees but a place to sit. Like skateboarders can see the invisible in a lot of ways, right? They have a very unique perspective on culture and life and style and environments and et cetera, et cetera. And I think that's, you know, coming full circle, like that to me is where I come all the way back around. Mm. And now that I'm at Vans, like I really get to like, not to sound like corny or get emotional, but I get connected back to a true love, you know? Yeah. And I think that is what is, what I'm most excited about now being at Vans.
How did you make that decision? You were at Adidas for a few years. How did you mm-hmm. make the decision to
sign Vans? A lot of it's through personal connections. You know, I had some talks, and it was always the one brand that wherever I was at, I was always there in my closet. I'm kind of looking at them, mm-hmm. like, you know. But you know, my son was wearing them a lot, right? And I also feel like, you know, a lot of times, like especially in the energy space, like sneakers are so overpowering,
yeah,
that sometimes sneakers wear the individual rather than individual wearing the sneakers. Mm-hmm. And I think Vans is something that more is like integrates into your own personal style. And that's always a brand that was always near and dear to my heart because of, you know, because of skateboarding. You know, I think a lot of brands play within space, but they're not from the space.
Right.
Right. Where Vans is like born and adopted by the community very early on. And, you know, after having the conversations and it was hard. I love my time at Adidas and, you know, specifically individual Torben.
Torben Schumacher.
Yeah. Like, I love that guy. Like, yeah, really connected with that guy. That guy, like, when we were cooking, it was a good time. And there's great people, you know, Brian Grevy and Erica and, you know, Daniel and there's, you know, Eric. There's mm-hmm. just some great people there. But what Vans allowed me to do was, you know, I was either always on the product or the brand side. Mm-hmm. I was never on both sides. And I always kind of wanted, you know, being from the entrepreneur independent space, you do everything from mm-hmm. empty to rubbish to design the shoe.
Yeah.
I was like, hey, you know, I would love to look over brand and product in more of like a GM kind of capacity. So that's kind of what they were propositioning me to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what got me excited. And also, you know, living in California and
the surf's better.
Yeah, all of that. And again, my son, I was always going back and forth because my son's sponsors are in California. And he does, you know, again, we were talking about it earlier, he does competitive jiu-jitsu. And so we were going back and forth a lot. And that's kind of when we decided to kind of make the full move.
Did you have like a playbook already when you came to Vans? Did you know what you wanted to do when you landed?
I didn't. I just had a love for the brand, you know. And I also felt like skateboarding, the industry is small, but the influence skateboarding has on culture is vast, yeah. right? Yeah. I mean, you know, someone like Virgil was a big part of that. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, low key, when I would meet with Virgil, I walk into his atelier.
Skating?
He's wearing Vans.
Yeah, Vans, okay.
You know, and he's like, well, you know, hey, you know, I'm like, oh, good, man. Like, yeah. we just talking here.
Yeah, yeah,
you
yeah.
You know, and just have dialogues about it. And I think that was a full circle moment for me. And you know, I think at Vans, for what I always felt was that, you know, the influence skateboarding has on the culture and broader culture of art and design and music and et cetera, you know, it had a unique perspective when you put that through the lens of skateboarding. And I think that's kind of what we did with this most recent launch of OTW and mm-hmm. the partnership with Sterling Ruby, right?
Right,
like,
right. So,
we created this skatable kind of sculpture that was quite impactful, and you know, I think that inserted Vans into a design conversation, not just a product design conversation, but environmental design conversation and experience. And I think that's kind of you know, that's what I liked about the opportunity at Vans, and is about being able to like be a part of the brand side as well as the product side. And you know, we got a great team.
What's yeah. it like being at Vans, VF Corp, being under mm-hmm. the same house as Supreme?
Interesting. You know, I mean, I've known James for many years, and obviously I have a lot of great friends there. And Supreme, like yeah. they're an anomaly, right? They're that unicorn.
Did you get to use the employee discount on the jacket?
No, this is many years ago.
something tells me he doesn't need the discount.
No, they're you know, the James and Eddie take care of me. I love those guys. And again, another brand that has really dimensionalized and you know, born very humbly out of skate, that has reached the heights that it's done today, you know.
Do you remember seeing it for the first time as a kid? Do you remember where that was? You would have seen Supreme?
Supreme, it would be when Chris Keefe and Jones and Quim and Gio, Peter Bisi, those guys would come to San Francisco, and They were all wearing Supreme, and you first noticed the quality, like the sweatshirts.
Yeah,
you're like, oh, these are like dumb heavy.
Yeah,
and they're good, and they just look better. You know, things like that. And it was, it's just, you know, again, I think a lot of it in a lot of things, it's taste level, and James's taste is paramount. Yeah.
Anything coming up at Vans that we can talk about, or any little teasers, little previews you can give us?
Yeah, I think, you know, I can't speak too much about it, but I think what Vans is positioned to do is grow with the culture and influence that skateboarding has, you know. And I think, you know, what we were able to achieve, you know, we had a soft preview last Paris in Paris Men's Week with OTW, and then we worked on a photo exhibition with Atiba Jefferson in architecture in Miami at Art Basel that was very well received. And now just a few weeks ago with the launch of Sterling Ruby. And, you know, I think that one was an amazing project, and that's going to be ongoing, that you'll see future collections and expressions from. But, you know, Sterling being a former pro skater and obviously, you know, blue chip artist. He's really challenged the team, but I love about Vans is, you know, the leadership there and the leadership at VF is really embraces creative thinking and progression. And, you know, and I think at the end of the day, I think that's kind of what skateboarding is all about. And what a, you know, as anti as skaters are, like, they're very style conscious.
Yeah.
Their influence is vast and rightfully so, because they move the needle.
Yeah. You know? Such a cool place for you to land too, just this idea you spoke about it a bit, it being full circle. And just, again, I was speaking to James before this, and one of the things he said to me that I really loved, he said, not many people could understand for someone from a small island in the middle of the Pacific to make it to where he is like a miracle.
Oh,
that's awesome.
I appreciate that from a dear friend. And, you know, again, like I come to work and they live and breathe it.
Yeah.
People are skating around. There's wetsuits drying off of racks there. That's, you know what I mean? Cool. If the waves are right, you're kind of like, oh, where is everybody? Like, you know what I mean? Like, and I love, like, you know, that word authenticity gets thrown around a lot and can be quite contrived depending how it's used. But at Vans, it's the real thing. They eat, live and breathe skateboarding. And I think with OTW, you know, what I like to say is, you know, it's kind of reorientation back to who Vans truly is. And I think that's kind of what we're doing there. And, you know, we also have a dear friend, longtime colleague, Drika, that just joined, and she's now the CMO that I worked with a lot of energy projects on at Vans. And we got some good things there.
We look forward to it.
Yeah. Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much for giving us your time. So much history.
I'm old.
So much history. But thanks again. And looking forward to seeing the continued projects. Always cooking.
Yeah. And, you know, again, I also mean it when I say, like, I think what you guys are doing and the individuals that you guys choose to talk to I'm always curious, and there's always great things. And I think you guys put a lot of people on to, like, stories and history and narratives. That's really important, you know. And I think, you know, if you guys didn't know what was up, you guys wouldn't have the topics and the individuals that you have. So
thank you so much.
Thank you, Ian. Appreciate it.
All right, everyone, this has been the Complex Sneaker Show. Actually going to be off for a week, so we will see you in 2 weeks. Please like, subscribe, and we'll see you in 2 weeks. Our producer is Jillian Hardman Webb. Our supervising producer is David Matthews. Audio editing done by Haley Choi. Research and graphics from Sean Villavicencio. The Complex Sneaker Show is a production of the Complex Podcast Network.